You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to the Horses Equine Innovators Podcast, sponsored by Zoetis. I'm your host, Stephanie Church, editorial director at thehorseandthehorse.com. Every day, researchers at universities and other institutions around the world are examining new ways to care for and understand our horses. In this podcast series, we talk to those innovators to learn more about their work. Today on Equine Innovators, we're taking a practical look at acute phase proteins, biomarkers such as serum amyloid A or SAA that help veterinarians spot early inflammation, sort out infectious disease concerns, and track horses' recovery in real time. We'll touch on how these tests fit into everyday decision-making, from biosecurity steps on the farm to managing performance horses and supporting antimicrobial stewardship. Joining me today are Dr. Holly Helbig of Zoetis and Dr. David Levine from the University of Pennsylvania's New Bolton Center. They'll walk us through which biomarkers they rely on most, how to interpret changes in SAA, what to consider in certain populations of horses, and where the latest research is taking equine diagnostic testing next. Thank you for joining us today. Let's get started with the basics. Dr. Helbig, could you answer this question? What are acute phase proteins, which we'll refer to as biomarkers in this conversation, and how do they reflect the body's early inflammatory response in horses?
Sure. So acute phase proteins, they're really a group of proteins that are typically produced by the liver, and the concentration change significantly in response to inflammation, trauma, infection. So they work as early biomarkers for us when we're trying to monitor disease or detect infection in horses. There's a couple different types. There's positive and negative acute phase proteins. So examples of positive would be serum amyloid A or fibrinogen. Those are things that rise during times of inflammation. And then a negative acute phase protein would be something like albumin. So the liver decreases the production of albumin in response to inflammation.
That's really interesting. Thank you. So as veterinarians, which biomarkers are you routinely testing and why?
You know, we measure a lot of biomarkers. If you look historically, the perfect biomarker would be one that goes up for a very particular condition and then goes down very rapidly so you could test it. You know, if you look at the research both in the human and animal side, everyone's been looking for that perfect biomarker for any condition. For us in the acute phase proteins, we use fibrinogen, we use white blood cells, which really aren't a biomarker, but they are a blood test we could use looking at systemic inflammation. And we use serum amyloid A often. Things that have been tried over the years, like haptoglobin and C-reactive protein, just haven't really found the niche where they work the best. So for us, the fibrinogen, serum amyloid A, and white cell are our biggest biomarkers for inflammation.
Okay, thank you. And so how quickly do key biomarkers rise and fall with infection injury or post-op inflammation? And how does that guide when you test?
I mean, that's a great question. And again, the perfect biomarker would go up instantaneously and then go down instantaneously. But in reality, fibrinogen takes 3 to 5 days to fully ramp up after, inflammatory or a significant injury in the horse. And then it'll take 3 to 5 days to go down. So, what you're really looking at when you're looking at a fibrinogen level is what happened about 3 to 5 days ago. If a horse comes in with an acute injury, the fibrinogen is usually normal and it'll go up about 3 days from now. Serum amyloid A, on the other hand, is a little quicker. It's also an acute phase protein released by the liver, but its half-life is a lot shorter. So where, serum amyloid A is usually about zero in a normal horse, it will go up in 12 to 24 hours. So a lot faster. And then because its half-life is so much shorter than fibrinogen, it goes down a lot faster. And it gives you a little bit more real-time look at what's going on versus looking at something that happened about 3 days ago.
So it sounds like this has really changed things like 15 years ago versus now.
I would say that whenever a new test comes out, there's a bunch that goes into it. Excitement at first, and it goes up and down. And then getting comfortable with which conditions does it work well for, which conditions does it not work well for. And then as you get more comfortable with it, that spreads out to others. And yes, I think serum amyloid A has been a game changer in the equine field in the last decade, especially as more work is done to understand where it's best utilized.
So what triggers besides infection and inflammation? I know you referred to the injury a moment ago, shift SAA, and how do vets interpret those bumps?
I guess that's the secret one that we get paid for. I can't tell you all of our trade secrets, but no, that's the hard part of interpreting any test. Like fibrinogen goes up with tissue injury too. Serum amyloid A has been a little more specific really about infection and inflammatory conditions. There's been some look at exactly what makes serum amyloid A go up in non-infectious disease. But really, I mean, if you want to get to the nitty-gritty of it, there are cytokines released in the serum that stimulate inflammation, and those cytokines are what stimulate the liver to produce the acute phase proteins and release them, and that's what we could test for. So serum amyloid A is really more specific for an inflammatory condition. There aren't a ton of conditions that have SAA rise that are non-inflammatory in nature.
All right. Well, thank you.
The only other thing that I would say is, so we do know that there are a few things that can elevate SAA that are not infectious. One would be vaccination, which we know peaks at about 3 days post-vaccine, and most of them, you know, return down to baseline around day 9. That can make it a little bit difficult to interpret results within that, you know, the first 10 days post-vaccination. Another thing would be administration of IV plasma to foals, since we know that plasma tends to come from hypervaccinated mares or horses. We know that that IV plasma may or may not, depending on the SAA in that plasma, but it could potentially the baseline SAA in a newborn foal. Another thing I think about is surgery. So, you know, there are studies post-castration. Dr. Levine can talk to this quite a bit post-surgery. But we do know that post-surgery, you know, horses can become elevated SAA about 48 hours, and then it will naturally come back down to normal. But there are a few conditions that are non-infectious that we do know will elevate SAA, and that's normal. And just things to keep in mind as a veterinarian as we're looking at these horses.
Now, Dr. Helbig, does baseline SAA concentration change with age? And should clinicians read the results differently in senior horses or horses that have metabolic disease or insulin resistance?
Yeah, at this time, we have not seen an increase in SAA in horses that are senior or with metabolic or insulin resistance type of conditions. So at this point, we feel very confident that SAA is not something that rises secondary to that. On the other hand, I will say in human medicine, we are seeing that SAA can rise secondary to metastasis. And we haven't done a lot of research in horses around that at this point, but I do think that it potentially could elevate the SAA. So when we're looking at the senior horse, that's something I always recommend, you know, just keeping in mind.
That's really interesting. Thank you.
If I add to that, it's Dr. Helberg's right. What's super interesting in the human side is that serum amyloid A also goes up with conditions of metabolic disease and obesity in general, because a lot of the metabolic diseases and obesity in people causes low-grade inflammation. But again, this comes with comfort of using a test, is that good research has been done on the horse showing that even on those horses with, you know, Cushing's disease or insulin resistance don't have increases of SAA, which is great information to use.
Great, thank you. So I'll ask Dr. Levine first, and Dr. Helbig, if you would like to jump in, please do so as well. What are your best practices for biomarker sampling and testing? Stall side versus lab, what do you recommend? And how often do you repeat tests when you're tracking a case?
Well, I'm very lucky. I work in a large hospital, so I don't have to do a lot of stall side testing. And my lab is basically stall side. But we do use the same stall side SAA test because it is the one that's been validated. For me, for biomarker sampling on routinely preoperatively, we usually will do all three, white blood cell count, fibrinogen, and SAA. And that's been standard. Although I think with research that we're working on now, we're basically being able to show that maybe you don't have to run all of those, and SAA is probably equivalent to running all three together. For the cases that come in with infection or postoperative cases, we do serial testing because one test doesn't really tell the whole story, where a trend up or down is really the big news for me. I usually will test SAA on infection cases or postoperative cases where I have a concern every other day, because that's about that 12 to 24 hour jump I'm looking for. And if I'm testing fibrinogen on those cases, I'll usually run a fibrinogen every 5 days or so, because again, it's just not as acute with its half-life, so it takes longer to go down.
So on the contrary, I'm an ambulatory veterinarian. So for me, false eye testing is really important, right? I don't have a lab with CBC chem, white blood cells that are run right there. So for me, I really rely on SAA. And when it comes to sampling, it's really designed to be run right off of whole blood. So, you know, drawing the blood, using that SAA reader right then and there is how it's designed. You can take it back for the veterinarians that are listening. You can put it in a purple tube, take it back to your clinic. You can also run it off of serum or plasma, but I strongly recommend that if you're going to run it off of serum or plasma, that you continue to run it off the same sample type, because the serum is slightly more concentrated than whole blood. So to have a better consistency, just trying to run it off the same type of sample is really important. But yeah, I use it stall side all the time, and I use it to help me make decisions sometimes. Like, do I want to run more blood work, right? Do I want to look at more biomarkers, or can I kind of pass and go on to the next clinical signs that I'm, whatever it is that I'm dealing with at that time. But it's a really big game changer to have it right there stall side.
It sounds like it. Yes. Thank you. Dr. Levine, could you provide examples of where biomarkers shine in real life?
Yeah, for my practice, again, I'm a surgeon at a university. You know, looking at the research that we did, a lot of the work I do is on diagnosing and preventing postoperative infection. Looking at where SAA has really shined for me in practice has been determining the horse that comes in with the acute swollen joint or effusive joint after being injected. Is it a flare? Or is it an infected joint? SAA has really helped in those cases, determining which ones are and which ones are not infected and which ones are just a flare. The horses that have a flare usually do not have an elevated SAA. And then postoperatively, especially when implants are used in fracture repair, we do serial testing and getting to see an increase and then progressive decrease at that 3 to 5 day, which is what our research showed in the normal cases, really makes you feel more comfortable about sending that horse home and stopping antimicrobial use. When you start to see SAA peaking after surgery when it shouldn't be, it's really allowed us to get earlier intervention on the postoperative infections before they get a full fulminant implant infection. And that early detection and early treatment has been a game changer, being that postoperative implant infection is one of the worst problems that we deal with in surgery in horses.
That's wonderful. Thank you. I'm glad that that's the case. It seems like it's probably easier on the owners too, having that specific information and being able to take the horse home earlier, perhaps.
I mean, horse owners never like having their horses here.
I was just going to say, you know, from an ambulatory standpoint, especially working at horse shows, you know, I use SAA so much when these horses are traveling and coming in, especially long distance. It's actually interesting. There's a study by Dr. Ortley that shows that long travel transportation does not affect SAA, does not elevate it. But we know these horses are exposed to a lot of wind while they're, you know, in the trailer or potentially flying. They come to a horse show, they're exposed to new hay, new shavings, a completely new environment. And a lot of the horses will show up and they might, you know, have a runny nose or be coughing. That can look like allergy, but potentially could look like infection. And so for me, that's where SAA shines the most, because I can use that after they've, you know, traveled a long distance, come to the horse show. Horse owners are asking for antibiotics immediately, right? And it's just trying to help them make that decision. Do we start antibiotics? Do we not start antibiotics? Do we quarantine these horses? Are we looking for shipping fever? And so on and so on. So I will say, from the ambulatory standpoint, especially as a horse show vet, that's like perfect real life use of SAA.
So it sounds like you handle an infectious disease scenario at a horse show very differently than you might have 20 years ago or so, right?
Yeah, it was based off of temperature and clinical signs, right? And now we have this tool that can help us make more accurate decisions. Again, like Dr. Levine said, it's not a one-stop shop, but it's an extra tool in our toolkit to help us make good educated decisions, especially with quarantine.
That's great. So Dr. Helbig, have you used biomarkers in foals?
Yes, I have used it in foals, and it's actually a great biomarker for the new foal exam. So, you know, historically we've run IgG, sometimes they'll do a CBC chem, but what we found is that SAA can be very sensitive in foals. We do know that the cutoff typically in an adult horse is 50, but in a foal, we give them a cutoff of 100. And that cutoff comes from some studies showing at trying to predict if these foals are going to become septic or not. So what we do know is that on a new foal exam, getting a zero or a very low number, that negative predictive value is where the importance is. That's really strong. An elevated FAA does not necessarily mean that that foal is going to become septic, but it's kind of a warning sign of, okay, let's keep an eye on this foal. Let's check it again in another 24 hours. You know, let's just pay a little extra attention to it. And while we're talking about foals, I will also say that administration of IV plasma, which a lot of foals do receive early on, can elevate FAA, because FAA can also, we know, be falsely elevated by vaccination. That plasma is coming from, you know, hypervaccinated horses. And so if the veterinarian is running IV plasma, we recommend taking an FAA prior to administering plasma, and then right away, as soon as you're done administering the plasma, you can take a new FAA to get your new baseline in case you want to check that foal again in another 24 or 48 hours.
Oh, that's really helpful, practical information. I'm sure there'll be people heading into the foaling season who will enjoy knowing that.
Yeah, it's a very helpful biomarker. And there's a lot of research around it in newborn foals. You know, the other interesting thing is we didn't really know at what age did that foal go from the 100 cutoff down to 50. And some recent research has shown us that actually within about 7 to 10 days, that foal is considered an adult horse at about 7 to 10 days. And the cutoff normally regulates back down to around 50, which is interesting.
Wow, that is interesting. Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Levine, how do you use biomarkers to help inform workups for suspected septic joints or tendon sheaths? And go ahead.
I touched on this a little bit earlier. When you're concerned, is it septic or is it not? A couple things you have to look at, right? So if this is a wound that just occurred, your biomarkers, even SAA as fast as it is, may not be elevated. But cell count within the tendon sheath and joint will help. When it's a post-injection, is it a flare? Is it sepsis? That's when your biomarkers can help a lot. SA and fibrinogen are often normal in those cases. It'll make you feel a little better about sitting on those. And then postoperatively is really where it shines. I'll usually check it every other day, waiting for it to peak, knowing that it may peak a day or two after surgery. That doesn't make me nervous because it's expected. First off, surgical inflammation we know can increase fibrinogen and SAA. Again, SAA should peak about 2 days after that versus fibrinogen 3 to 5. And then looking as you're treating, what we want to see is that we have that post-surgical peak and then quickly having it decrease. And the nice thing is we could have SAAs going from, you know, 1,000, 1,500, all the way to 300 within like a 24 to 48 hour period, showing that the antimicrobials that you're on are working, as well as the surgery cleared the infection. And when you see that peak and then rapid decrease in SAA, you really feel good about your treatment plan, where if it's continuing to rise or is stagnant, it gives you an idea, well, maybe you either still have infection or the antibiotic that you're on is not effective. And then oftentimes we will determine when to stop the antibiotic is when the SAA returns to normal and the horse clinically looks good. So again, it's a tool in our toolbox amongst all the other things that we have, but it really does help give you an idea when you're staring at a horse that looks good postoperatively, as it should, but the SAA is climbing. It gives you that early indicator that something's not right versus the horse that the SAA is dropping dramatically. It gives you that validation of your treatment.
Thank you.
Dr. Levine, do you typically run the SAA on the synovial fluid or a whole blood? Just out of curiosity.
I occasionally run it on synovial fluid. I run it on the whole blood more commonly just for ease as I'm running them serially every other day. For horses where I do worry, is it a flare or is it septic? I have pulled SAA on the synovial fluid and I will use that because it does seem to correlate well with whether or not there's infection. But if I can avoid sticking needles in those joints every other day and take a whole blood sample, I will.
Yeah, I get asked this question so often, and everybody always wants to test it on the synovial fluid. And there's actually a few studies out there that show that whole blood will actually become elevated. The FAA of whole blood will become elevated prior to synovial fluid by about 12 to 24 hours, which is really interesting. And I don't know if you saw that study that just came out, but they looked at a group of horses. They control horses. They induce synovitis and they induce septic arthritis. And consistently, the synovitis horses, the SAA, remained zero or non-detectable. And the septic arthritis horses were, you know, had elevated SAA. What they looked at was the contralateral limb or the other joint that was not infected. And the SAA also went, became elevated in those as well. Not as much, but they became elevated as well. So there's some thought out there that there's kind of like a new isoform that the joint, I'm sorry, I'm getting kind of nerding out on this now, but that there's a new type of isoform that the joint is releasing in regards to SAA. And I think that's just really interesting.
It's funny. I've had that question from veterinarians as well. And I've told them the same thing is that, you know, and that study kind of confirmed it to me when they showed increases in SAA in the contralateral limb is that SAA and fibrinogen are primarily released from the liver. And that's why the blood SAA goes up faster than the joint one is because you have to wait for the circulating blood SAA to get into the joint. So to me,
it makes
more sense if the other joints have SAA because it's circulating in the blood. So to me, it's exactly that that's the problem.
Yeah, I agree. I get that question so often. And I think that we as practitioners, we just think that that joint is completely isolated off. But based on this information, we know there has to be some sort of leakage or some inflammatory process, right, that's communicating with that joint, which I find interesting.
You guys are both welcome to nerd out as much as you want on this podcast.
Nerding out. Sorry.
No worries at all. You are welcome to do so. I find it all very fascinating. You know, both of you have referred to antimicrobials, and I'm going to jump ahead to that question. I was curious about antimicrobial stewardship. It seems like this really helps steward the antimicrobials that we have available. Does somebody want to speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it has been a lot. One of the things that you're always trying to avoid doing when you're doing antimicrobial stewardship is changing antibiotics over and over again. And when you're looking at an infection and we're dealing with either a implant or a joint infection in my realm of things, and you're staring at it every day and you don't know if it's getting better and do I change antibiotics? Do I not change antibiotics? And, you know, you worry if you wait too long and you don't change them fast enough, you're going to get, you know, to a point where there's no return. And so SAA has really allowed us to be like, oh, look, SAA is coming down. This antimicrobial is working. Stay on the one. You don't have to jump ship and switch versus, hey, this antimicrobial is not working. Let's switch now. So it's been better at selecting, especially when sometimes the cultures take 3 or so days to get back and a sensitivity another day after that. So we're trying to use the best information we have. A culture insensitivity is great when the culture is positive and has an antimicrobial sensitivity profile. But in the meantime, you know, SAA has really allowed me when I need to switch, when I don't need to switch, and then also when I can stop.
Great. Thank you. So Dr. Helbig, let's go back to talking about a real world infectious disease scenario that you might be seeing out in the ambulatory setting. Let's say a horse returns from an event to a farm and starts coughing, and maybe they have no asthma history or they just don't cough usually. How do you pair SAA with immediate biosecurity steps, and what would those steps include?
Sure. And this is extremely normal in real life, right? Horses come home from the horse show. It's no different than sending your kids to school. We all worry about infectious disease as well as allergies and asthma that can occur. So, you know, in these situations, SAA is such a great stall side test that we can use. If that number is above 50, then we know that we want to quarantine these horses. Ideally, whenever horses come home from a horse show, they should be quarantined for 14 days. I know that can be really unrealistic, but even if we can keep them at one end of the barn and, you know, clean their stalls at the end, little things like that can actually be very helpful. But if we have one that comes home, it's febrile, it's coughing, has nasal discharge, we do know based on some clinical studies that the SAA actually can be elevated prior to horses becoming febrile, secondary to infectious disease. We've seen SAA become elevated prior to them shedding, meaning that if we quarantine them right away, they haven't started that process of shedding the disease, which can be extremely helpful in the barn. Mm-hmm. And then on the backside, these horses that potentially, you know, have equine influenza or herpes virus, it's very expensive to test them continuously to see if they can get out of quarantine. what we have found is that FAA typically goes back down to zero or normal before that PCR goes back to normal. Or if the FAA is normal, typically the PCR is going to be negative. And so we can save horse owners money by running those FAAs and not having to run a PCR every single time to determine if that horse can get out of quarantine.
That's really interesting. Thank you.
Yeah.
So also, as an ambulatory practitioner, are there any biomarker ranges or patterns that prompt escalation for you? Say, like, you want to send them to imaging or referral to an equine hospital versus watchful waiting at the farm?
Yeah, and I think this is one where a lot of veterinarians get caught up in. Like, hey, does a value of 500 to 1,000 mean something different than 2,000? We have seen through studies that viral infections tend to be a little bit lower, bacterial tend to be a little bit higher, but it is all horse dependent. So you could have one horse with cellulitis that's going to have a value of 500, and the next door, the other horse with cellulitis has 2,500, and they're clinically looking the same. So we really try not to say, okay, these ranges are identifying a certain type of disease. What we recommend is looking at that and then doing serial testing. So is that number becoming elevated or coming back down? There are a few situations, not a lot, but there are a few, and one that comes to mind would be colic. It's not 100% guarantee, but we do know that in acute colic, that an elevated FAA can, one, mean colitis, but also secondarily can mean that it has more likely need to have some sort of surgical care. And so that would be why one acute colic that FAA is looking really bad might help me make that decision to say, hey, it's time to go to a referral hospital sooner than later.
Okay, thank you. And I just want to ask this question because you mentioned earlier that both of you get the same question a whole lot. Are there any other common questions that you get from veterinarians about SAA that you would love to just put out there as kind of an FAQ?
I think that the one for me that I try to tell veterinarians all the time is foot abscesses. Hmm. It is just not a consistent systemic inflammatory event. Sometimes they're very walled off in the foot. The horse doesn't have cellulitis up the leg. They just have an acute foot abscess. Referring veterinarians will run an SAA and it's normal and be like, this test doesn't work. And in retrospect, I'd say that it does. It tells you that the horse isn't systemically mm-hmm. inflamed from the foot abscess, but there are conditions. So I'd say the one thing I'd like to get out there is that for every test, there are situations where it's not ideal. And that's one where I don't use it routinely for foot abscesses because I just don't see it as giving me all the information because some of them are walled off and some of them aren't.
That's interesting.
Yeah, we see that with umbilical cord abscesses as well. Umbilical cord infections, we see that as well because they become walled off sometimes. And so it's not always the best test to determine if it's infected or not.
That's interesting. So any other questions that you get commonly, Dr. Helbig?
Yeah, you know what I get the most commonly is the case of veterinarian gets called to the farm, typically some sort of cellulitis or very acute infection, and they take an FAA, say that FAA is, you know, at 500. And they come back 4 days later, the horse clinically looks so much better, it's been on antibiotics, it's doing much better, but that FAA is now 1,000. And that really baffles them. And the reason that that number doesn't correlate is because the number is correct. What happens is that there is a peak that is reached at about 24 to 48 hours with FAA. And in that situation, most likely that veterinarian missed that peak and then it's coming back down. Think of it like a bell curve, right? So the veterinarian probably came out pretty early, maybe 6 hours after cellulitis started. That number is at 500. It might have peaked all the way up to 3,000. And then a few days later, they're catching it as it's coming back down to 1,000. And so if there's one thing that I can really, really, you know, get across on this messaging is that trying to retest at 24 to 48 hours to really get that baseline, it's really important.
Serial testing, so important. Is one test means very little, except if you're looking to show that SAA is low and zero in a non-infected case. But when you have it as a high number, you really have to serially test to figure out where you are on the bell curve. So important.
So you've talked about veterinarians and how you explain SAA to them. How about horse owners? How do you explain results to your clients so that they understand the plan, Dr. Helbig?
Yeah, so horse owners actually really love this. I think they like holding on to a tangible number. So what I explain to them is that this is a test really just looking to try to distinguish infection versus inflammation. A value above 50 is going to mean that there's something infectious of nature that's occurring. We're almost to the point where horse owners are asking for this. Hey, can you run an SAA? This horse just doesn't seem right, or it's punky. And, you know, can we run an SAA and just make sure that it's okay? They love to hold on to that tangible number, whatever it is. And if it is elevated, then I get into the conversation about, okay, we need to retest them, serial testing, the importance of it, why we need to see if the number is going up or coming back down, and just explaining to them also that if we're initiating antibiotics, that we will use serial testing to then determine if we're on the correct type of antibiotic, as well as, you know, when to potentially be done with them.
Okay, thank you. So for both of you, I'm going to ask you each, as innovators in equine practice and veterinarians who keep an eye on all the research that's coming out, what do you think is next for biomarkers and equine practice, particularly SAA? Do you want to go first, Dr. Levine?
I mean, we're always trying to be on the cutting edge. We're working currently on looking at SAA as a marker that we can use preoperatively for all our pre-surgical testing. In the human side, going from massive blood testing preoperatively and getting it down to something manageable, cost-effective, and quick for us, we just ran the study looking at SAA versus white blood cell count and fibrinogen as a marker of safety, basically pre-anesthesia. And that should be coming out soon, showing that SAA was a better test than any of the two and better than all three. So for me, you know, even in the field, I think where this could be used is there are a lot of, you know, quick knockdown anesthetic events that occur in horses in the field, well, be it castration or minor laceration repair. And I think that it's a test that could be done in the field without having to run lab work back that shows safety and is effective.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So one of the really cool things about SAA in horses is I recently kind of did like a index of all the studies that are out there. And we currently have well over 80 to 90 different studies on SAA in horses in different conditions, everything ranging from foals to colic to septic joints. The list goes on and on. But what we do know is there's also a lot of room for more research. So for example, we don't have a lot of information on arthropod type diseases like West Nile or Lyme disease or anaplasmosis. We also don't know, and we get asked a lot, does administering other types of medications impact SAA? So for example, some sort of, you know, IM type of medication. We know that vaccination can impact SAA and elevate it. You know, it'll peak at about 3 days post-vaccine, and most of them will come back to normal about day 9. But are there other medications or other treatments that could potentially impact SAA? And, you know, like I said before, I think there's room for looking at metastasis in horses and those senior horses to see what kind of impact SAA, it has on SAA. I think there's a lot of room for research. But the exciting thing about this space is that I can think of right now of at least 5 or 6 studies that are going on that I'm aware of with SAA that hope to get publicized within the next year or so. And I think there's just still so much more room and more studies that can be done.
Yes, that's amazing. Thank you for, I'm excited. 80, you said? 80 studies?
Yeah, well over 80, almost 90 studies.
That's amazing.
Yeah. My goal is to have like a library so that the veterinarian can log on to our website and be like, okay, synovitis, and then be able to look at every study that talks about synovitis or castration or whatever the clinical thing, you know, that they're looking at. We don't really have that right now. We don't really have any way besides going on Google Scholar and searching, you know, SAA and castration. So I'm trying to make this index for the veterinarian so that they can not only get like a quick summary of how SAA responds to that clinical disease, but then secondarily, like, here's all the studies and research to back it up.
Thank you. So I just wanted to say quickly, where can listeners find more about you and your work?
You know, there's really great resources on YouTube on Zoetis Equine. Their YouTube channel actually has an Ask the Experts series around FAA. They also have it around performance horses and joints and OA. But you can go on there and literally as you're driving down the road, you can, you know, play some of these episodes. And it has specialists from everything from foals to, you know, your sport horse to surgeons. And there's just really great resources on how they use FAA in the field, particularly around different types of diseases. So I think that's a great resource for horse owners. You know, goetisequine.com has tons of information around FAA. And I think just even searching Google Scholar can be helpful.
Thank you. And I will link to those YouTube videos in the show notes. That way people can go straight to that and find those links. What about you, Dr. Levine? Is there any place that people can learn more about what you do and everything that's going on at New Bolton?
I think that the best place to do that is at New Bolton Center's website, and that's vet.upenn.edu/New Bolton Center. We obviously have a large teaching hospital as part of Penn Vet, and you know, I'd say that most of the information that you'd want is available there.
And New Bolton does a great job with their socials, so I'll link to the socials as well, so everyone can see the announcements from your institution. So thank you for
love the socials.
We do love the socials, indeed.
Can I add in one more?
Sure.
To that? One other really great resource that just came out last month is on the zoetisequine.com. There's actually free CE if you go through and take an FAA module that's online. It's a great place to learn about FAA, where it can be used, how it gets used. It reviews, you know, all of our basic studies that we use frequently in practice. And it's just a great resource. And also you get some free CE. So I encourage listeners to log on to that if you're a veterinarian and get your CE credits.
So that resource is stablelabacademy.com, and I will also link to that in the show notes. Thank you.
So thank you for joining us on Equine Innovators today, and a big thank you to Dr. Helbig and Dr. Levine for breaking down how biomarkers fit into veterinarians' everyday decision-making. If you want to take a deeper dive into diagnostics, biosecurity, or the latest research, head it over to thehorse.com or to any of the resources we've just discussed that I will list in the show notes. We'll see you next time with another look at the tools and ideas moving horse care forward.